We often talk about the wonderful natural areas in Wisconsin, and it's always a treat to focus on our amazing wetlands. Katie Belfus with me today is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Katie, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming by.
It's always fun. Thanks, Larry.
And with us as well, Dave Linderud, who is a retired wildlife biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And he's being honored with a Wetlands Award from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association for his great leadership in wetland education outreach through his work in the Tiffany Wildlife Area. And Dave, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
I'm really pleased to have you both with us. Katie, first, we do this, I think, every time you're on the show, and that is to talk about what is a wetland. But let's do it again. What is a wetland?
Well, you know, Larry, it's a crucial part of my work every day, and so I never get tired of talking about it. But a wetland is defined by three different factors. Uh-huh. Is there water at or near the surface at all or part of the year? Is there soils underneath the wetland that are wetland soils that have developed under hydric conditions? And are there plants that have special adaptations to be able to deal with having wet feet all the time or for part of the time?
Yeah.
So those are the three indicators that we look at. And often these wetlands happen, you know, in between uplands
yeah.
and water
yeah.
and are really critical. People are often real familiar with, you know, cattail marshes and ducks and think of those as wetlands, and they're wonderful wetlands. But there's a whole variety of rich, beautiful, diverse wetlands in Wisconsin, and that's part of what I love to share with folks.
Yeah, and in that diversity, there are a lot of important reasons for having.
For sure. Well, there's different kinds of wetlands develop in different kinds of parts of our landscape. So there's certain kinds of wetlands that'll develop along a river system to be floodplains for those rivers. There's certain kind of wetlands that develop where there's groundwater percolating up through certain bedrock formations.
Mm-hmm.
And so each one has its own role. Each one has its own suite of plants and animals that call it home. And so we can't replace one with the other. They're each unique in their own way.
Yeah, they sure are. And how much of Wisconsin is wetland, and I know that's changed a lot over the years.
Unfortunately, we've lost almost half of our wetland acreage in Wisconsin, and we have of our original 10 million acres is gone now. So what we have left is really, really critical to protect, because wetlands give us some of the biggest bang for the buck, so to speak, in terms of services they provide to human communities, like water cleansing and flood protection and wildlife habitat, so that we have areas to go and enjoy and recreate and seek whatever we seek in nature, spiritual uh-huh. solace or whatnot. So they're very important places for human communities as well as for wildlife.
Yeah, beautiful places and great places to visit and to be around. Dave, I want to get to you. By the way, I didn't mention our phone number or anything else, so let me do that right now as we have listeners here. You may be aware of wetlands in your area. Do you know how to protect them, or do you know about them, have experience with them you want to share? What's your favorite way to enjoy our state's beautiful wetlands? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Dave, I know you're being honored for your work to protect the Tiffany Wildlife Area. Some people are going to say, where the heck's the Tiffany Wildlife Area? Tell us that first.
The Tiffany Wildlife Area is in the lower part of the Chippewa River, mm-hmm. just at the junction of the Chippewa and the Mississippi. It's found between Alma, Nelson, Durand, and Pepin in Buffalo and Pepin counties.
Yeah, and can you describe that area a little bit for us?
Well, it's part of the lower Chippewa River. It's one of the more unique ecosystems of the state. It is a large floodplain forest. In fact, it's the largest floodplain forest in the Midwest, contiguous with the Upper Mississippi Wildlife and Fish Refuge along the Mississippi River. There are more endangered, threatened, and special concern species, plants and animals found in that area than any other area of the state. It's just such a unique area. It's this large floodplain forest that makes it so unique, and the habitat is so special.
So, and when you're somebody, I'm sure, saying, well, now a floodplain forest, What is the meaning of that? What is a floodplain? It's hard to say too. Forest.
It is kind of special because when we give these tours to people into Tiffany, and they're standing in this beautiful ash maple forest, or they may be standing in a tall grass prairie, and I tell them that if you'd been out here in the spring, or occasionally in the fall, during high water, we would all have to tread water right now.
Yeah.
Because all of those areas are underwater, you know, seasonally, and they're the trees, all the forbs and grasses, all the wildlife has adapted to this seasonal flooding.
Yeah.
And
very cool.
It's very unique. Yeah. Yeah. But basically, you can boat through a floodplain forest at times.
How did you first get involved there?
Well, I was assigned as the wildlife biologist at ALMA in 1979. And I worked there through 2005 and then retired. And I was in charge of the property manager of the Tiffany Wildlife Area during that time, and worked with a lot of different conservation groups and people to, you know, educate people about the unique area.
Yeah.
It really took off, though, in year 2000 when our natural area staff began a feasibility study to create a state natural area. And they went through all the DNR records, university records, and compiled all the information about the flora and fauna of the Lower Chip River, and found that it was this unique place, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's 70% of all fish species are found in the Lower Chip River that are found in Wisconsin.
Wow.
75% of all nesting birds. You know, there's a quarter of our native prairie is found there. And the Lower Chip River has some of the last remaining remnants of floodplain savannas, which are some of the most critical and endangered habitat types found here in Wisconsin. So when all this was put together, we, you know, all the local folks found out what a unique place this is, and so we've tried to find ways to get people out there, so that they can learn about this. And we found that the more people are educated about wetlands and unique places of the state, the more likely they are to support the management and protection of them.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously that Tiffany area, the state of it is probably a lot better, or maybe better than when you started. You've probably seen a lot of change, that's for sure.
Well, in some respects, it's bigger. I mean, I bought several thousand acres out there now that are in public ownership. When I first started there, one of the major habitat components of the floodplain forest was the American elm.
Yeah.
They have basically died from Dutch elm disease. Ash is now more vigorous, and we're as sad to see emerald ash borer will eventually be in that area and will probably decimate emerald ash, the ash trees. But one of the unique things about the area, too, is how the animal species have changed.
Mm.
You know, we have now, there's a nesting bald eagle about every mile and a half in the Lower Chip River. Occasional bears, gray wolves, fishers, tundra swans stop there, peregrine falcons. We got wild turkeys. it's not unique to Tiffany. It's happening through all the southern part of Wisconsin. We're seeing more and more some of these animals that are appearing here as our landscape is changing.
Yeah, it's really cool. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in and talk with you both. And again, you can join in. If you have a question, comment, or maybe an experience to share, love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Sam and Stevens Point, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Perfect. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Over the summer, I actually worked for a restoration company, and we did a lot of work, unfortunately, down in Illinois, in the Medewin Tallgrass Prairie. We restored a Dolomite Prairie, and part of it was wetland. And in a week, we put in 60,000 native plant plugs and have been managing it for invasive species. But I really want to stress that these restored areas are never going to be good as remnant prairies, remnant wetlands, and how much we need to protect them and manage them and keep invasive species out of these areas. And it's really worth it to pay for the management of these areas.
Mm-hmm. I thank you very much for calling, and probably both Katie and Dave have a comment. Katie, I'll start with you.
Well, I really appreciate, Sam, what you said about the fact that restored areas can never be as good as the natural communities. And that's a really important point. It's restoration is really important because we have lost so much. We have to restore. But the most important thing is to protect what we have left and to manage what we have left and protect it from invasive species, as you point out, because nature spent thousands of years creating these ecosystems, and we just can't do that in a year or 2 years or 5 years or 100 years. It takes time for these things to develop, and there's been a lot of research to document that. We have to restore. Restoration is great, but the first priority should be protection.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave, a comment from you?
Yeah, I agree 100%. We have to. The hard part is managing what we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, prairies need prescribed burns. They need maybe mechanical brush control, you know, trying to control shrubs and tree encroachment and things like that. And they're expensive, and it's timing is difficult depending on burn weather and things like that. So trying to maintain those is critical.
Yeah,
I think one really positive change, Larry, is that we used to actually actively seek to destroy wetlands and drain them because we saw them as useless areas. They were wastelands. You couldn't farm them. You couldn't. It was hard to get through them because they were soggy and wet and muddy. So there was actually an active campaign funded by our government to drain and promote the drainage and destruction of wetlands. And so I think it is important to recognize that history and to see how far we've come. Because now we recognize that was really foolish, and that there are these services that we get from wetlands, floodplain forests. When we lose floodplain forests and our rivers suddenly have nowhere to overtop their banks when we have big rain events, we wonder what the heck's going on. There's all this flooding. Why is there water in my basement? Well, we've gotten rid of a lot of those systems that used to help us manage flooding. And so protecting what we have and recognizing that we've changed that and that we recognize now wetlands as really important on our landscape is really important.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you, Sam, for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Visiting today with Katie Balfas, who is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, and Dave Linderud, who is retired wildlife biologist with the Wisconsin DNR, and he's going to be receiving or honored with a Wetlands Award from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Great to have them along. You can join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Feel free to email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question. And maybe you got a great wetland photo. Love to see that, too, on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking wetlands today with our two guests, Katie Balfas from the Wetlands Association, Wisconsin Wetlands Association, and Dave Linderud, retired DNR biologist, who is being honored by the association this year. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Eleanor in Eau Claire has a comment. Eleanor, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Eleanor Wolf. I'm president of the Lower Chippewa River Alliance, and Dave Linderud is our organization's treasurer. So I would like to have him talk a little bit about his open car train rides that are the chief fundraiser for the natural resources fund account that we have that goes to protect and actually buy new land. But I'm not going to talk about it. I want him to talk about it. He organizes and provides speakers for 2 trips a year. I mean, it is a major fundraiser, but I want him to talk about it.
Eleanor, thank you for calling, and I'm really glad to have you ask that question because I want to hear about it too. What about it, Dave?
Yeah, thanks, Eleanor. You know, the award that I'm receiving from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, you know, I couldn't do without folks like Eleanor and the other people that nominated me, like Karen Voss, Sean Hartnett, Eleanor, Chris Johansson, and there's a whole host of other people like Judy Lively and Doug Faulkner and some other faculty from UW-Claire and UW-Stout, and a lot of DNR staff that we get together and we put on these programs for the public. We take them by train ride into the Tiffany Wildlife Area, and we couldn't do this without the help of the Chippewa Valley Motor Car Association. They are so generous in donating this rail time to lead groups in and out in Tiffany, and we could never take literally the thousands of people that we do, you know, every year into the Tiffany Wildlife Area. And we've been able to use these train rides as fundraisers, and we've worked with Dunn County Fish and Game Club to create an endowment fund for the Lower Chip River through the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin. And that fund in the last 5 years has now increased to $42,000. And a portion of that, 5% of that money, will go to a public agency to help manage habitat in the Lower Chip River, or acquisition, invasive species control, whatever they see fit. And so that's been a tremendous benefit.
That's very cool.
And these trips are fun, Larry. I've gotten to go before, and I've actually taken my entire family. My two little boys came with us, and we had a great time. It was the better part of a day, and you sit in these open-air train cars that are basically sort of benches on these little train cars, safe, but yeah. Open, so you really can see what's going on. And they get off and do some great interpretation of research that's happening there and restoration and in interpreting what we're looking at. It was really, really fun.
And when are these held?
They're held in May and September. Those are the times when the weather's the best. There's fewer bugs.
Mm-hmm.
This year they're going to be on most Saturdays in May and September. If people are interested, you know, Wisconsin Wetlands holds one. The Natural Resources Foundation, we work with them. We hold two. Wings Over Alma is a group. They do a couple. Beaver Creek Reserve. Minnesota Audubon brings groups in, but just go on, just Google Chippewa Valley Motor Car Association, and their website will show the schedule of train rides, and it lists the contact person that you have to get in touch with to schedule a ride.
And Larry, I can get you the web address. There's a great story on Wisconsin Public Television. Brad did a story on the Tiffany train ride, so people can actually see what the train looks like and get a little piece of that. I'll share that link with you following the show.
Yeah, that's great. Put it up on my Facebook page. That'd be perfect. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was a Natural Resources Foundation trip that was done through Wisconsin Public TV. And just a great, great example of what occurs on those rides.
And we'll put post the website, too, so people can get the information they need come May.
Yeah, fun stuff.
Lots of fun stuff. Todd and DePeer, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have two questions about the mouth of the Fox River at Green Bay and north to Suamico. I see a lot of wetland grass there that looks to be non-native, kind of bulrush or sorghum-looking tall grasses, and I understand they're non-native. My first question, is there anything being done to reclaim that, get rid of that non-native species and reintroduce native species? Also, is there anything going on at the mouth of the river or addressing the dead zone in the, in the bay there by planting additional wetlands? And I'll take your answers off the air.
Mm-hmm. Well, great question and great timing, because I was just up there last week meeting with some of our partners as we work to develop outreach programs in the area. That grass that you have seen in abundance all along Green Bay is Phragmites, and unfortunately it's not limited to Green Bay, although that's where it is most famous. It's certainly up along Door County and all along Lake Michigan. I was in Ozaukee County yesterday and saw it along the roadsides there. It has really proliferated in the state in the last 10 or so years in a shocking, shocking way. Invasive species everywhere, including in wetlands, are a signal that something is wrong in the landscape, that something is not working the way that it needs to be, much like when you get a scab or a bruise on your body. It's a symbol that something has gone on there that has injured you. Where water cycles are disrupted, where we don't have natural hydrology, where we have sedimentation coming from farm fields or from our communities, that creates an ideal habitat for invasive species, including Phragmites. And unfortunately, until you solve the problem that causes the situation to make it possible for them to grow, it's a matter of fighting those species. And that's a really excellent, you know, doing, there is a control effort that the Department of Natural Resources and many other partners have been engaged in recent years to try to control that species. There's some mechanical control. There's a lot of spraying targeted spraying with herbicide to control that and try to maintain the biodiversity that was once there. But until we can look at the broader scale problems of sedimentation and phosphorus loading and all that good stuff, invasive species are a huge problem that we're going to have to be managing.
Yeah. Dave, a comment from you?
No, I'm not familiar with the area, but I know that the state has been trying to control that Phragmites in a lot of different places.
Yeah. And in answer to his second question, there is a ton of great work happening on the west shore of Green Bay by a lot of different partners, the Nature Conservancy, Ducks Unlimited, Northeast Wisconsin Land Trust, a bunch of other fine folks who are doing a lot of work to protect the remaining wetlands that exist in that area and restore those that can be to try to help with that problem. The dead zone is sort of a separate area, but all of this stuff is working towards restoring natural communities and natural hydrology.
Donna in Green Bay. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm calling about wetlands within residential areas that many years ago were maybe farmlands and two lots for sure down from where I'm living in an apartment section area are usually flooded over every year. And the farmer would pump the water out, and then she had brought in dirt and filled it with dirt, and they're up for sale. And I wondered, aren't there any laws on the books to protect those wetlands, whether they be owned? Because they're all owned by somebody on this particular road, and we're not far from the East River. And when it rains or snows, they're wet. We see deer. We have lots of ducks and geese that come. We have turtles in the water now, and we've seen a fish or two. There's animals. There is animal life there. Deer are there sometimes. I'm just wondering what I can do. Are there laws against?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
There certainly are laws at the local, state, and federal level that limit what people can do on areas that are identified as wetlands. The state of Wisconsin has policies to protect wetlands. Wetland fill is one of the activities that's not allowed. You can't dump dirt in a wetland, a wet area, in order to make it not wet anymore. So I would contact your local DNR to get information about who's the best person. Often there's a water management specialist for each county that you can get in touch with to find out more about the project and what's going on there. I don't know the case in particular, so I can't comment on the particulars. But in general, wetlands are sort of not supposed to be built in. It's not a good idea.
Yeah, there you go. And so contact your local DNR office. Mm-hmm.
Frankly, though, the other larger question is having folks like Donna who are looking out in their community and being aware of where wetlands are and what is of value to them and keeping an eye on what's happening. That's so important. And I just encourage people to be aware of the wetlands in their community and to pay attention to what's happening to them, because it helps your community to keep those wetlands.
Absolutely. Donna, thank you for calling. I want to give Scott in Milwaukee a chance to join in, too. Scott, hello to you.
Good morning.
Morning.
That was a good segue to my question. Several years ago, my wife and I had success in a fight to preserve some wetlands and old-growth woods in our area. And one of the key reasons that happened is because there was a navigable waterway going through the wetlands we were working to preserve. And if my memory serves me correct, the laws governing development of navigable waterways at that time was there could be no development within 50 feet. And I was just curious what I know there's been a lot of talk about pro-development and minimizing restrictions on wetland and so forth. What is the present law concerning navigable waterways and development, please?
I don't want to answer that in a technical way. I want to answer it in a broad way and let you contact the Department of Natural Resources for specifics. If it's a navigable waterway, it also brings in the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, because they have oversight through the Clean Water Act of navigable waterways. So there are the rules about setbacks and the rules about wetland protection laws have changed. Last year, the legislature passed a new law that changed wetland regulations in the state, and many people feel that that legislation was sort of a green light to development. And in our opinion, it does make development of wetlands, fill of wetlands for projects more possible than it was before. There are still really important steps in the process to do what we've talked about before: avoiding wetlands in your project if at all possible, minimizing any impact that you do have to do, and now mitigating for the impacts that you have. So mitigation used to not be required; now it is required, and so that's a benefit of the law. Although I would still prefer the avoid part of that part of that scenario. So the rules have changed. The specifics are still coming out as the law gets implemented, and there are also local regulations. Local communities, county level and municipal levels, have some authority to develop ordinances of their own to protect water resources, and so it's important to check in with that as well. Does that help,
Scott? I think we lost.
Okay. Well, I hope that helps, Scott, and call our office if you have more questions.
And thanks a lot for that question. Katie Balfus and David Linderud are our guests today. Katie, Outreach Programs Director with the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Dave, retired DNR biologist, being honored by the Wetlands Association. Great to have them along. Coming up in 10, 12 minutes, we're going to be hearing from Darren Bush, who is going to be talking with us about kayaking and paddling around the state of Wisconsin. So we'll look forward to that as well. But right now, Katie and Dave with us. And Earl, you know, before we go to Earl, and Earl, I'm going to get to you, so hold on for one more minute. I want to go back to you, Katie, because Dave's getting this award, and I want you to say a few words about Dave's work.
Yeah,
he really earned this award.
He really has, and when we received his nomination, you know, we have a little form that asks a couple of little questions, and it went on for pages and pages because there were people who wanted to speak out on behalf of Dave and all the work that he's done. And we've talked about the train trips and the Tiffany Wildlife Area, but that's just the tip of the iceberg of what Dave has done over the years. And our Wetland Awards honor people for protection, restoration, and enjoyment. Those are the three categories. And people say, enjoyment? Like, why is that part of your mission? Mm-hmm. But we fundamentally believe that if you get people out into the landscape, enjoying and experiencing it, as Dave said earlier, they're much more likely to then support the kinds of conservation activities that are critical to preserving these habitats. Yeah. And Dave really embodies that. And, you know, I told you I went on that field trip up at the Tiffany on the train with my kids. And he not only sort of organizes all these people to provide really good interpretation, but he's thinking of these little things that make the experience enjoyable. He's organized a parking lot area that's temporary because so many people come on these trips that they can't accomplish. Just these little things. And he's got his flags to cross people across the street. So his work really covers the gamut of getting all kinds of people involved and really dedicating his life to it.
Perfect. And obviously somebody who is really deserving of this award. Earl in Oconomowoc, thank you for waiting. Hi.
You're welcome, Larry. Thank you. I wanted to make a comment. A number of years ago, I was in the Chippewa Falls area, and a businessman up there had his own private plane, and he took me up and flew me over the Chippewa Floyds, and it is breathtaking. You have no idea how immense it is trying to look at it on a map or something like that. When you get up and can see the thing in its totality, it is huge, and it's just one forested island after another with channels cut through it by the river. And I still can close my eyes and see how fantastic a view it is.
Yeah. You're talking about, 17,000 acres, something like that? Dave, do you know offhand?
No, I don't.
I should have that number, but I don't have it.
It may be
right
21,000.
Yeah.
I think it might be 21,000 acres off the top of my head. But it is a beautiful, beautiful area. There's no doubt about it.
I think too, if Earl had been able to fly south from Chippewa Falls down the Chippewa River, would have been very impressed too, the immensity of that area.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
where it hits the Mississippi River.
We did that. We flew down the river and So thanks for taking my call, Larry.
Yeah. So glad you had that opportunity.
Thanks, Earl. Thanks a lot for calling. Rod in Weyerhaeuser, you're up.
Thank you, Larry. Yeah. Sometimes it's so easy to be negative thinking all the time. But am I correct in thinking that, like, sometimes it's a lost cause because I've got this old geography book, and it shows, after the glacier receded, Glacial Lake, Wisconsin, and when you see those natural towers around Black River Falls that had all been washed out. So now when you go, through Toma, where that was lake there, Glacial Lake, I see, all that just black dirt, which is, it probably would grow blueberries, super. But I'm just thinking to myself how important the wetlands are, because you just think how many billions of dollars they spend shooting these things out in space trying to find, what do they look for? The first thing, water. So, you just wonder, with the global warming, which I'm still on the fence on that, if we're causing it, I don't know. But I don't know. I got a lot to say, and I wouldn't get it on the air. But due to the loggers, too, a lot of this damming from years ago, they actually created some of these original lakes, up here, Long Lake. That was four lakes north of Rice Lake. And a lot of these chains, like Island Lake and McCann and all them, that was dammed up. But, at one time, that may have been all water. I guess I'll get off the air.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Well, I think an important point there is that historically, we've seen a lot of change over time on our landscape, but we're talking on the millennial sort of time frame, thousands of years, and those some changes are possible in terms of something becoming a lake at one point in time and then being a prairie later on, and through that sort of geologic time. But now, because we've got development, when we see changes in the landscape, and let's say climate change happens because of global warming, how do we help plants and animals find their new appropriate home when we've got a little tiny preserve here and then a big vast area where there's no natural areas and then a big preserve farther away? How do we help them move? How do we help them adapt? When we have large contiguous ecosystems, that's much easier. When we have little disjunct populations of things, it's much harder. So I don't know if that helps answer any of his questions, but it was a thought that came from his call. So
thank you very much for calling, and Katie, good response. Thank you. Thank you very much. Gary in Boscobel, comment from him. Hi, Gary.
Thank you, Larry. I wanted to connect with one of the earlier callers about the value of biodiversity. And I was president of the Prairie Enthusiast for about 10 years, and we've worked to protect that grassland biodiversity for 35 years or so. But I've come to the conclusion that with climate change and population growth and damage to our environment, that probably the most valuable thing that we can leave for future generations actually is the biodiversity of Earth and in here in Wisconsin. So I wish there was a way that we could reach people and convince them of the value of these sites, whether they're wetlands or whether they're prairies or intact forests, that our life support system is woven from the biodiversity of our landscape. So I think it's critical to get that message out.
Mm, couldn't agree more.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Gary, for calling. I want to give Karen and Eau Claire a chance to join in, too. Karen, hi.
Hi. It's a pleasure to be able to comment. I want to congratulate the Wisconsin Wetlands Association for finding such a perfect recipient for the Enjoyment and Education Award for Wetlands. I've actually been on those trips and helped lead a couple of them, and one of the things that just amazes me is when you look at it, that Tiffany Wetland area is the bottom end of a funnel, basically, for the drainage of nearly a third of the state of Wisconsin. And that's, that speaks to its importance, but what it also speaks to it for me is how valuable it is when people like Dave get folks out into the field and get them to appreciate just, you know, when a raindrop lands on my property, where does it go? Most of us don't know the answer to
sure.
that question.
Mm-hmm.
And I think amazing how much land is drained by that Chippewa River drainage and where it all ends up is an area that Dave has worked for many, many years. And I guess my question is really, how do we... I know we're doing it, but I see so much value in getting people to understand or recognize the importance of where the water goes when it lands on your property. What happens to it after that?
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of my comment and question, and thanks again.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks, Karen. I mean, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for her. She's just been a great resource on the Wisconsin Wetlands Association train rides, and her expertise with the DNR has been just tremendous. But that's one of the things we emphasize to people that, you know, some people say, well, what difference does it make if you fill in an acre of wetland, say, up by Rice Lake? But these effects are cumulative. Mm-hmm. And the more you do it, the more you're affecting the speed and, you know, the volume of water that runs off here down the Chippewa River right by Durand, where it's where the river is at one of its narrowest points. And so we're all in this together, and whether it's the Chippewa River or the Fox River, Wisconsin River, and in some cases, you know, what we've seen with the warming of the climate, precipitation amounts have been just tremendous. We used to talk about a rare 100-year flood. Now you're talking about 100-year floods are more common. Even 500-year flood amounts are starting to be discussed, and we have to be careful about what we do with our wetlands and try to preserve them as much as we can.
We have a phrase in our office, no matter who you are or where you live, wetlands affect your life. And I think that sums up that conversation. Everybody, take a moment and think about where your water comes from. Where is it going? How do you fit in the piece?
And
that old saying, we all can't live upstream, really still applies.
Good one.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you both so much. Congratulations, Dave, on your award.
Thanks so much
for being with us today. Dave Linderud, a wildlife biologist, retired from the DNR, and a Wetlands Award winner from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association for his leadership in wetland education. Katie Belfus, great to have
always
you.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, we've been doing this together for a few years now, and it's always fun.
Thank you so much. Look forward to the next time. Thanks so much, Larry.
Katie Belfus, Outreach Program Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Always a lot of fun to talk about our wetlands. And in a way, we're going to stay on that topic. Coming up next, Aaron Bush of Rutabaga Paddle Sports is going to talk about how to enjoy our lakes, rivers, and marshes in a kayak or a canoe. I hope you'll stay tuned right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.